One of the phrases that every child exclaims more than once while they're growing up. In fact, some of you parents probably heard it yesterday or maybe even on your way to church today. That's not fair. Ever heard that? Yep. Just yesterday, I'll bet, didn't you? That's because even as adults, we mutter the same thing, don't we? We have experiences where life isn't what we want it to be. So we, maybe not in such a childish way as kids do, maybe in some cases we do, but we also mutter, life, this isn't fair. And the reason we say that is because the truth is, life is not fair. Someone gets the job or the promotion because they knew somebody or for some other reasons, not because they were better skilled or really earned it. That's not fair. A judge renders a verdict that isn't satisfactory to either side. Or somebody doesn't carry their share of the load and they still get the same rewards and the same pay as everybody else. That's not fair. We can think of all kinds of examples, I'm sure. You're probably churning over some things right now at your work or someplace else where it's just not fair. But I think when we say life isn't fair, what we really mean is life isn't even. It isn't even. Life is not lived on a level playing field. We know that. Some people have greater advantage than others. Some come from wealthy families, and they're a step ahead already. Some come from a background that is very positive and affirming. Others don't come from that. Some people are born with academic abilities, and they get the academic scholarships. Others are born with athletic ability, and they work at it. They get the athletic scholarships and the free rides to college. Others have to work and pay and come out of there with debts. Some people are just blessed with good looks, although that's relative, I know. Some people have more talent, just seem to be more gifted. And on the other hand, there are other people who just experience misfortunes or accidents or illnesses. That's not their fault. It just happened. Some people get cheated. Some people just come from a disadvantaged background from which there is little hope, and then all of life is just constantly uphill for them. So there's that unevenness, that imbalance to life that isn't fair. But the danger with this unevenness of life is that if we're not careful, it can be used as an excuse for laziness or irresponsibility. Or blame, or contempt, or even crime. And if we dwell on the unevenness of life, it will eventually strip us of our own peace and our own happiness, and will result in some form of conflict. And so the lesson we're going to look at today, there's a surface lesson, there's a deeper lesson too, but the surface lesson simply is the fact about taking responsibility for what God gives us. And this message actually comes on the heels of a series I just finished on Sunday nights about the importance of responsibility and the consequences of irresponsibility. The text I'm looking at in Matthew 25, as you can see, is verses 14 through 30. And this is where Jesus is using a parable to teach about his kingdom. What his kingdom is like. And he often described his kingdom through these mysterious parables, stories. And they're usually stories that are in the extreme because there's a clear point that he's trying to make. But the main idea that we'll notice here is that God cares about what we do with what he gives us. Now remember, everything he gives us is from his grace. Now, with that in mind, let me just introduce this with the first two verses of our parable. Verse 14, "For it," that is the kingdom, "is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves," or his servants, "and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and he went on his journey." Now, talent. Don't let that fool you. Don't think of talent here in the form of ability, although we could make the application, but that's not what a talent is in the Old Testament context. It's not musical ability or being able to balance plates on your head or something like that. A talent is actually a measure of weight, or we could say an amount. So a measurement, an amount. And this wealthy individual who has servants divided his financial holdings among his 3 servants to manage while he goes on a long trip. But the first thing we notice is that he did not divide his wealth among them equally, did he? And so if Jesus is teaching us something about the kingdom, then we can pretty much come to this conclusion about the way things are divided up according to grace, and that's the way, in fact, that God hands out responsibility unevenly. Yes, God does that. He hands out responsibility unevenly. Luke 12:41, you don't have to turn there because we don't have time, but there's another parable that Jesus told, and at the end of it, one of the statements he made in applying that parable was that he said, "From everyone who has been given much, much will be required." So we know that not everyone is given the same amount. Some are given much, others are not given as much. But the more one is given, the more responsibility there is, the more accountability there is. That's just one of the principles of grace, that God gives according to his grace, the way he wants to. And we trust his greater wisdom and knowledge in everything that he does. God is never unfair. He is a God of perfect justice in everything that he does. And so in the case with this parable that we have in front of us, we see the same idea. And so for the sake of simplicity, just to help us as we get a mental grasp of what's going on, and maybe just to get a visual picture of this, let's just say in this case, a talent represents an amount of this man's gold. Okay? This is just for our understanding. An amount of his gold, and we'll just say that each talent represents a bag of gold. So we're going to see here then that to one man he gave, we'll say, 5 bags of gold. However big the bag was, you can visualize that on your own. One guy gets 2 bags, and one guy gets 1 bag. Now, why didn't he divide it evenly? We don't know. He just chose to do it this way. One thing we do know, however, is that the person who owns the wealth has the right to decide how to distribute it. I don't mean to be political here, so don't get all upset with me. Well, you can, but that much is fair. We don't have a principle in the Bible that tells us the government tells people how to distribute their wealth. The Bible does talk about caring for the needy, and those who are wealthy have great responsibility to meet those needs. But you don't have anything about the government coming in and telling people how to distribute their wealth. And most wealthy people are very good philanthropists. Not every wealthy person is Ebenezer Scrooge or Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life. Those are cases of extremes. We know that. But it is fair that the one who owns the wealth can distribute it as he sees fit. And that's what takes place here. But again, remember, the point of the parable here is not about fairness. This is a different point that is being made. The point here is, how will we take responsibility for what God gives us, whether it's much or little? What are we going to do with the hand we're dealt? Whether it's a life of ease and privilege or a life of hardship and difficulty uphill all the way. Well, let's see what happened. We have first the five-bag guy in verse 16. Immediately, the one who had received five talents went and traded with them and gained five more talents. How about the two-bag guy, verse 17? In the same manner, the one who had received two talents gained two more. So both these guys took what they had, invested it wisely, doubled their money. What about the one-bag guy? Verse 18. But he who had received one talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Well, at least he's keeping it safe, so nobody's going to steal it. But the next thing we run into, beginning at verse 19, is that there is a day of accounting. A day of accounting. There's a day where they report. So verse 19, now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the five talents came and brought five more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted me with five talents. See, I've gained five more talents. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Also, the one who had received two talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted me with two talents. See, I've gained two more talents. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Now, as you look at that, you'll notice that if we're going to talk about fairness, there seems to be a little bit of unevenness here, even among these two good servants who did a good thing. Because both of them doubled their original allotment by the same percentage. Only the first guy actually, dollar-wise, generated more dollars, more gold than the second guy, but each received the same reward. Both put in charge of many things. Both enter into the joy of the master. Shouldn't he have given the rewards according to what they gained? Well, not necessarily, because if you go back to verse 15, you'll notice what he said there. He entrusted each with that original amount according to his ability. We all don't have the same ability. We don't have the same temperaments. We don't have the same aptitudes. Some of you are a whole lot smarter than some of the rest of us. I hate you, but that's okay. No, I don't. I'm glad you're around. We'd be in deep trouble if everybody was like me. But he entrusted these men according to their ability, and each fulfilled their responsibility according to their ability. And we're rewarded accordingly. But remember again, this is not a lesson about the unevenness or fairness of unfairness of life. This is about taking responsibility for what we've been given. So we got reward there. We also have rebuke. Verses 24 through 30. And the one also who had received the one talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. Andy Stanley says this is a case of first century whining. It really is. This one-bag guy took the one bag he was given and did absolutely nothing with it. He buried it in the ground and ignored it. And then, when he reports to the master, he has the nerve to subtly blame his master for his own lack of productivity. What did he say? You're a hard man. You're a hard guy to work for. And you're a ruthless opportunist, is what you are, sir. You reap where you do not sow, and you gather where you have no right to claim. You are a greedy capitalist, is what you are. And I was intimidated by you. And so I played it safe. I took the money, I buried it in the ground, so at least when you came back, I could give it back to you, what you gave me, because I really didn't want to be entrusted with this responsibility. I didn't want to blow it. I didn't really know what to do with it. So here, I'm giving it to you, back to you. Well, did the master say, good job, at least you put it in a safe place and you kept it. Glad to have it back. No, he didn't. Verse 26, but the master answered, said to him, you wicked, lazy slave. The word wicked seems a bit strong there. If you want to replace it with worthless, if that makes you feel better, then go ahead. That's kind of what he's saying. He's a worthless slave. Worthless and lazy. You knew that I reap where I did not sow and gathered where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank. And on my arrival, I would have received money back with interest. So that's a good point. Now, in verse 26, where the master says, you knew I was one who reap where I did not sow, and so on. He wasn't making an affirmation to the truth of that statement. What he was actually saying was, if you really believe that, if you really believed I was that kind of a person, then why didn't you, at the very least, put the money in the bank and draw interest? But you didn't have the ambition to do even that. You didn't care enough about my riches to do anything with it. You just buried it and ignored it. Now, we know that there's a clear lesson here about responsibility and irresponsibility. And if I wanted to just leave the message at that single point, I think we could at least go home with a practical lesson here about taking responsibility for the things that God entrusts to us, whether it's finances or possessions or abilities or anything else. And we would learn then that we cannot blame God for our disadvantage. We cannot make excuses for irresponsibility. We cannot let our laziness become somebody else's burden. But there's a deeper lesson here. Even though that truth is presented here, and that's a good practical lesson, there is a deeper lesson to this parable, and it's what Jesus really was meaning to convey here. So the deeper theological lesson, I'll call this point, but don't yawn here. Don't go to sleep on me now. Just stay with me. We're just about to the end here. Understand this from the theological perspective here when we're thinking of these individuals in regard to the kingdom of Jesus Christ. I want to suggest to you that this one talent guy, this one bag fellow who buried his gold does not represent a genuine believer. The characteristics that we see about this man stand out as reflective of all those who reject Jesus Christ and the salvation that is offered to him. And there are two basic characteristics that are evident here through this man. The first is he had a distorted understanding of the heart of his master by what he said in verses 24 and 25. You're a hard man, you're a greedy capitalist, you're all that stuff. Now, the master obviously represents Jesus Christ, the master of his kingdom, who distributes by his grace his riches, He is God the Son. And this irresponsible slave represents, I believe, every person who has a warped idea about the character of God. They think he is harsh. He's uncaring. He's unfair. He's disconnected. He's disinterested. And their distorted impression of God then has an influence on their conduct, their attitude, and what they do with the things of God. And so the second characteristic then is this man had no appreciation of the value of the things of the master. What are the valuable things of God? Well, I've been emphasizing this morning the riches of his grace, that big umbrella, his grace. And everything that falls under that, from salvation to spiritual gifts to a daily presence and strength and encouragement and joy and all the things that God might give to us that come from the riches of his grace. It includes the reality of his love, the appreciation of it. The riches of his grace also includes the revelation of himself. And how has God revealed himself? Well, we know he's revealed himself through his own creation. So nobody is has an excuse that's going to hold any water when they say, I didn't know there was a God. Yes, you do. Just look at his creation. He's revealed through his word all about his character. He reveals himself through the witness of other believers. What are you going to do with what he's revealed? Scratch your head and say, it's not enough. I don't understand it, so I'm going to blow it off. You know, in life, if you lack appreciation for the value of something, you will neglect it or ignore it or abuse it. I'm going on a limb here, and I hope this doesn't come across as a confession, but I'm pretty sure that people don't drive rental cars the same as they drive their own cars, do they? You're a little harder on those cars because you don't have to pay for the repair. As I drive around sometimes too, I see property people have. Now they don't take care of it. I'm always kind of staggered when I drive by and I see snowmobiles in front yards all year round with weeds growing up all around them. You pay a lot of money for that thing. I see people in their travel trailers, because we have one, and I'm always taking care of mine, always washing it, waxing it. And then I see somebody drive down the road or in the campground or this dirty, filthy, mold-covered thing. Come on, you paid good money for that. Well, when it comes to the things of God, how do we treat those? This third servant, we know, had been given less amount, but he had equal responsibility with the amount that he had. And he had equal opportunity to do with it what the other guys did with theirs. Yet he ignored it and neglected his master's possessions because he had no appreciation for the value of what he was given. He drew a conclusion about his master, which was incorrect. He misunderstood the heart of his master, and therefore he didn't appreciate anything that belonged to him. And that's the attitude so many people have toward the precious truths of God and the riches of his grace. They have all kinds of excuses, but all the excuses and all of the arguments will be empty and void on the day of judgment. And as we see in these next verses, judgment came, and judgment is severe. Verse 28, therefore take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. Now, I don't understand why that was. Why not give it to the guy who had the 2 talents? Kind of even things out a little bit. But I don't quite understand the theology of that, other than I know that when God gives his grace abounds. And when we treat his grace with the respect and the honor that it's due, he gives more grace. So maybe that's got something to do with it. But verse 29 helps us to understand a little bit about that principle too. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. That's the person who didn't appreciate it and did nothing with it. In verse 30, throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness, in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. MacArthur says, those who despise the riches of God's goodness, forbearance, and long-suffering, burying them in the ground and clinging instead to the paltry and transient goods of this world, will ultimately lose everything they have. This worthless slave is cast into outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's one of the descriptions Jesus frequently used when he referred to hell. Now, this is an extreme, as I said. You know, some of these parables are taught that way intentionally, because Jesus intended to make a serious point about the nature of his kingdom and those who reject it. They ultimately are rejecting him. And excuses will be very thin and the consequences severe for those who take that position. Now, this part of the teaching, I know, is not popular with some Christians today. We don't make apology for it, and we don't preach it with joy and excitement either. If it wasn't meant, though, to be taken seriously, then I doubt Jesus would have taught it. I don't think he would have said the things that he did. But as we understand this parable, at least to some degree, then we know that the universal message for all of us is accountability, our accountability to God. And whether you're a 5-bagger, a 2-bagger, or a 1-bagger, each of us is responsible for the measure of grace and truth that God has given to us, as well as all of the other things that he gives to us. And verse 19 reminds us that after a long time, the master will return and settle the accounts. And on that day, will you and I be like the first 2 servants? Or will any of us be like the 3rd servant and try to offer our sorry excuses and blame, none of which will be acceptable? So the response, I guess, is just a matter of heart searching. What am I doing with the riches of God's grace that he has entrusted to me? Because someday I'm going to give account for it. Father, thank you for the worship time we've had today.